We'll go digital in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the analog studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. This is a rain replay. ISDN is an acronym for Integrated Services Digital Network. In 1990, the thought was that ISDN technology would forever change technology, and so it did. We're going to QSY back to 1990 to one of the early interviews Hap Holly, KC9RP, RAIN founder and producer, conducted. Hap sat down with two Chicago experts in the digital field at the time. One was Rich Belcastro, N9JGP, now WV9B. The other was Ted Kikatos, N9IXE. In 1990, Rich was a manager in voice and digital networks with McDonald's Corporation in suburban Oak Brook. Ted was a development engineer and consultant with AT&T in suburban Naperville. The first voice you'll hear is Rich Belcastro.
Basically, ISDN stands for the Integrated Services Digital Network, and it is a worldwide infrastructure. It refers to the worldwide infrastructure of the public network system that is largely in place as we speak.
What do you mean by public network system?
Public switch network, the network that you dial into or talk through for data, voice, or whatever.
From your home telephone.
Yeah, from your home telephone right now is the easiest example, or your computer when you dial up. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a lot more when we talk about the whole infrastructure. The whole issue of ISDN, you have to go back to the evolution of what's taking place right now. In the past, it was all tone. In other words, when you spoke over the network or even when you transmit your data from a computer, you're going over tone or analog, right? It's a sine wave that goes onto the line. You use a modem. It goes from digits to tone. To make a long story short regarding the interface between any two points on the network, it's now evolving to becoming end-to-end digital. Very important point. End-to-end digital. What does that mean and why? Well, many reasons. Among them are it becomes a noise-free network because now your information is transmitted in digits, pulses, on or off. It's not subject to the noise environment of tone. It's not like an AM or FM signal, which is subject to noises of various types. So it's either on or off. So your voice is transmitted over the digital network using a technology called PCM, pulse code modulation. It's a digital encoded scheme that some gentleman named Shannon, was it Shannon or Nyquist, determined that if you sample a sine wave at twice the maximum frequency you want to transmit, you can reproduce it on the other end by just sampling the maximum frequency twice. So if you wanted to transmit 4K, 4 kilohertz, you sample at 8K. And that's all. Twice, you grab it. Twice within one period, and you'll reproduce it perfectly. So that's how you transmit tone or analog or voice or variation in up and down tones. The point is the sampling is taking place in your phone set at 8K. Actually, in the phone world, I think it's 3K. So we're trying to transmit. So we'll transmit 6K pulses out. That's definitely within the capability of the telephone line. 6 kilohertz is no problem. And you got to think of it as pulses. I mean, if I could draw a picture, you'd see 6,000 pulses per second sampling your voices.
It's the data rate.
The
6K data rate.
Data rate, right. Back to the point. The point was, is the evolution taking place right now under our feet or over our head, whether it's underground, whether it's microwave, whether it's terrestrial, whether it's satellite, is now becoming end-to-end digital. So when you pick up your phone today and talk to somebody across the street or across the country or whatever, it's becoming end-to-end digital, and it's changing as we speak. Ted here works for AT&T in the development of the switches that are interpreting this digital information and converting it back to the information that we started with in the first place.
What I find with this digital technology is lower noise floors, so the interviews that I do via phone lines are getting remarkably sounding like they're local.
Right. In fact,
it can be explained very easily because previously, the trunks circuits between cities were analog, and now those trunk circuits are being converted to digital. And so you have end-to-end digital connection between cities. And what Rich is talking about is this evolution towards having end-to-end digital from people's homes. And so whether you're talking across the street or across the country, it will sound as if the person is right next door.
because you're not sending the tone, you're sending some code, and on the other end you reproduce that information by interpreting the code. So it's like you're right there. You're not really sending a signal which gets lost. And I'm saying you're reconstructing in essence. Okay.
And there's no degradation from capacitance or anything down the phone lines.
No. As long as you can reproduce those pulses on the other end. That's only one advantage of PCM. I mean, the other advantage is opens the whole world of other capabilities by sending pulses. In other words, let me give you an example. Integrated services digital network means exactly that, integrated services. It allows me to integrate voice, data, image, fax, all that kind of transmission technology over a single channel. So the whole point to PCM is now that we do things in digits, we have computer communications that can take place without modems. We have new technologies on the other end in terms of transmitting pictures and all kinds of control information. So it's no longer just voice. It's control, it's pictures, it's data, it's image, and on and on and on. The point I want to make this far, though, is this all started with Carter Phone. I don't know, there's probably not too many people in the audience that are going to know that, but the Carter Phone legislation took place in the early 60s. This gentleman, in fact, I forget where he was from, he wanted to tie something other than the AT&T, other than the Illinois Bell equipment onto the block in his house, and he was told he can't do that. Well, he said, I can. This is a free country, took it to court, and he won. So 20 years later, 1982, came what? You know what happened in 1982? Divestiture, where the federal government, Judge Green, and a few other people said, hey, we got to break up this monopoly. We want competition out there. What happened? Sprint, MCI, cable and wireless, we're naming just a few. You know, one of the reasons why you could have a variety of phones in your house now and a variety of answering machines and all kinds of stuff is because of this one guy in the early 60s, Carter, challenged the federal government on this monopoly. So 1982 came, AT&T's broken up, and now we've got all this competition, and now we've got these new technologies. So the Integrated Services Digital Network is there certainly for the providers and carriers to make some money, but the service that it's going to offer to the user is just unbelievable for integrated voice and data. What, you had a thought?
I was going to say that what you were saying about the integrated services with the voice and computers, modems, fax machines, all those types of services that some people already have in their homes. The way it is today with regular analog circuits between your home and the telephone company, for each one of those devices that you might have in your home, you need a separate phone line. But when you move towards a digital connection between your home and the telephone company, you can have a single pair of wires carrying multiple
channels of data.
That's correct. So under the ISDN specification, there are prescribed protocols where you can have a particular number of digital channels and a particular number of PCM encoded voice channels carried over a single pair of wires to someone's home.
The fiber optic will allow you to carry many channels. It has a much wider bandwidth than a pair of wires. It is a new technology and a standard. That's the beauty of it. It is an international standard defined by the CCITT, the Consultative Committee for the International Telephone and Telegraph, is the organization that is defining the standard for ISDN. ANSI is also part of it and so on. But it is a standard for the worldwide public network infrastructure defining the protocol to be used for this and a number of other sets of rules that everybody will conform to. And that's how we'll talk to each other. It offers integrated voice, data, and image. It allows for simultaneous voice, data, and image over, as Ted said, this single pair of wires, specifically three channels.
You're listening to a Rain replay from 1990 featuring Rick Belcastro, N9JGP, now WV9B, and Ted Kekatos, N9IXE, both of whom were immersed in that time in ISDN. Integrated Services Digital Network Technology in the Chicago area. We'll resume Hap Holly KC9RP's conversation with Rich and Ted in a moment. This is the Rain Report, available for transmission over amateur radio on therainreport.com, from Twitter at the Rain Report, and via iTunes. We'll return to 1990 in a moment.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
This is probably the most important part of ISDN. If I can do anything from this interview, Hap, I want to communicate the idea that there's two major services that I want to communicate to the audience, BRI and PRI. B as in basic rate interface, and PRI as in primary rate interface. The basic rate interface is made up of three channels or three appearances. It's sometimes referred to as 2B plus D. So basic rate interface equals 2B plus D. 2B channels and 1D channel. The B channels are used for information, and the D channel is used for signaling or control. The B channels are 64 kilobits per second, and the D channel is 16 kilobits per second. Now, I'm not kidding when I say we can give you this service from your central office here, Centel, which I don't know where it is in Des Plaines. They can deliver that service to you over that single twisted pair of copper coming to your building today. Two 64 KB links and a 16 KB control line. Now, what does that mean you can do? Well, with the control line, you can do all kinds of things because you can send information in packets over the control link and flush your toilet from your office. If you go to the office and maybe you forgot to flush your toilet, you can conceivably do that as long as you have an interface box between the little box on your wall and your flush tank. But the information can be sent to some kind of control. We have people at McDonald's that sit at their desk. They have a telephone on their ear talking to the operator in the computer room. They're sitting at a keyboard and they're doing a packet switched session with a computer somewhere over the second B channel. And over the D channel, they're doing some other kind of control in terms of what they're doing with that data on, that they're sending on the B channel.
What would they be doing with that data?
How about when you call your mother across the country? Suppose you make a long-distance phone call. It's Mother's Day. You ring her up, and the line is busy. What happened? You set up all this metal across the country to find out you get a busy tone. Then you hang up, and all this metal is torn down. Well, the infrastructure being set up now is over an external network. An external network will go out and find out if your mother is busy. It uses much less copper to do that. It'll come back and say, oh, your mother's busy. I'm not even going to set up this metallic path. It uses a common network to do that. So it's using much less facilities, freeing up that copper that you would have used to find out that your mother's busy to people who are actually talking. That's what the D channel is used for.
Not to make this more confusing than it is. One example of the basic rate interface is you have, as Rich said, two B channels and one D channels. Those are the terms that they've been labeled in the specification. The two B channels can be used for anything. You know, one can be used for a telephone call, a voice call, or another one can be used to connect your terminal up to another computer. And then all of the signaling information and control information is being sent back and forth between the central office and the phone at your home over the D channel. Some of the ISDN telephones have displays on them, a 24-character, one- or two-line display. The messages that are printed in that display come over the D channel. Or when you push a button on the phone to dial a number or to pick up another line or something like that, the message from the phone that you've pushed that button is sent to the central office via the D channel. So it's kind of free form.
Is this analogous to what we have today where when you use a modem and a computer, the modem is passing along data and control characters as well to tell the computer, okay, start sending data or stop
sending
data?
That's right. That's right. That's called in-channel signaling. The difference is, very important difference, when you call your mother again across the country, you're going out there to find out that she's busy by in-channel signaling, so you're busying up the normal voice channel. Now, this is called out-of-band signaling.
And when I surmise that the in-channel type of information we're talking about, or the in-channel type system, would be applied today where we're using modems to process data from a computer to computer, and down that line not only flows the data itself, but the control characters, which obviously slows down the whole process. The maximum you'll get down a phone line today anyway is probably 9600 baud under the typical copper arrangement we have today. In the BRI system you're still talking about, where you have the 2B and the D channel, and the control characters are carried along on the D channel, and therefore you're far less limited on how rapidly you can send the data down the two B lines. Ken, why don't you elaborate a little bit better for those who are a bit more computerese than I am on how that works.
An example would be when you're performing a file transfer over regular means, say from one PC computer to another, you might be using an X-modem protocol or something like that. You would have to add the overhead of the protocol itself to your transmission time. If you had a 10K file, the actual time it would take to transfer that file would be something more than that 10K, you know, 10K times your baud rate. Whereas with these protocols and the standards prescribed under the ISDN, the signaling information, the checksums, and all of those type of control messages are sent in packets over a dedicated channel separate from the data. This is a means to improve the throughput over that pair of wires between one location and the other.
So not only do you have the 64 KB data transfer, you have a very efficient 64 KB. It's data. It's your information.
You've just heard a history lesson of sorts from 1990 about ISDN, Integrated Services Digital Network Technology, from two experts in the digital field at the time, Ted Kekatos, N9IXE, a development engineer and consultant with AT&T. The other was Rich Belcastro, N9JGP, now WV9B, a manager in voice and digital networks with McDonald's Corporation, both in the Chicago area, when this conversation took place in 1990 with RAIN founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP. When Hap's interview with Rich and Ted first aired, Hap was producing what he dubbed the RP Report, prior to the establishment of the Radio Amateur Information Network. We'll conclude this early look at ISDN technology next time. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2016 RAIN. All rights are reserved. Now for all those connected with these programs by digital means, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the RAIN Report. Available on demand on therainreport.com, on Twitter at The Rain Report, and via iTunes. Keep on hamming!